We continue with Air Talk listeners who are veterans sharing their stories about service. We're at 866-893-KPCC. I'm very interested in how your service affected your life, positively or negatively, and we've heard a wide range, as you'd expect, in these past 20 minutes or so on Air Talk. I also want to bring in how veterans handle grief, the loss of people who've served alongside them, or in the years after military service, those who were close to them because of working together in the service. With us from UC Irvine, co-author of a study that's conducted at UCI, Pauline Lubens. She is an analyst at the nonprofit Swords to Plowshares, which focuses on veterans' issues. Pauline, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Larry. I'm really delighted to talk about this, and I've been really gratified by the interest in the topic that we've received.
So you've had in-depth interviews with some veterans, also surveyed veterans to ask them about this. The ways in which people experience loss can be so vastly different from a soldier who loses someone, who's on the same battlefield they are, to someone years later who takes his own life, and how people connected to them process it. What did you find about the ways these different experiences affect the grief process?
So these were specifically combat veterans who had served in Iraq or Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And yes, I interviewed 28 veterans across the country. And so the themes that emerged in the interviews was that suicide death is unexpected and can make acceptance of the loss harder. Combat death is expected and can ease acceptance of the loss because it's expected, and also if somebody regards it as a heroic death. But guilt over the inability to prevent a comrade's death, either by suicide or in combat, can make the acceptance more difficult. And then attribution of blame for either of those modes of death also creates anger. Importantly, and I was thinking about this when one of your previous callers was talking, so a number of the veterans talked about the brotherhood forged in combat, and an earlier caller talked about the camaraderie of the military, and one of the themes that emerged is that this, of course, intensifies the emotional response, particularly for the combat death. And then finally, we live in a country where only less than 1% of the population serves in the military. And so detachment from the civilian world can make it much more difficult to cope.
Is that true? Less than 1% serves?
Yes, less than 1% serves in the military, and the total veteran population is a little over 7%. And that includes all eras of the wars.
Have we ever had such low figures, do you know, historically?
You know, that I don't know. I mean, it's an all-volunteer military, and so that's the figure at the moment. I don't know what the rates have been since we first instituted of all-volunteer military, but yes, it's very low.
On the grief?
So,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And so there's obviously, for most people, the wars and serving in the military are just not a very personal factor for them.
And so much of it is regionally dispersed, too. You go to parts of the country and you're going to find that 1% considerably higher, and other areas you're going to find, even lower. It's just very rare to find someone with military service. I wonder about friendly fire as well, when someone's life is lost to an accident. And it comes from, a member of one's own military. Do you know how that affects the grief process?
Well, I don't. I mean, that didn't come up. Of the 28 veterans that I interviewed, nobody talked about friendly fire. One person actually did talk about the death of, he had lost a comrade in combat, but he focused in the interview a large part on the death of a young Iraqi child that he had developed a relationship with. And this child was killed by one of the other factions. And then another guy talked about the death of an interpreter. And so the theme here, of course, is that you become very close to someone and then you lose them in combat. And I think what was clear that when they lost buddies in combat that they had trained with or that they were serving with, death is intrinsic to war. So those deaths were not, those deaths are somewhat expected, even though you hope it doesn't happen. Some of them said if by the grace of God, it might have been themselves, that if they had been the one in the vehicle, it might have been them. But the deaths of people who you don't necessarily expect to die in war, which are civilians, even though more civilians die in war than combatants, seem to really affect that one person in particular when he was talking about it. But I don't know. They didn't talk about friendly fire. The thing that was striking about the suicide discussion was one of the running themes in talking about describing the deaths was that, you know, there's that relief when you come home that nobody in your unit died in combat. And then somebody dies by suicide, and that creates anger, even disbelief. I had one guy say that when his friend died by suicide, he so didn't believe it that he tried to insist that the police investigate it as a homicide. Eventually, he acknowledged that it was a suicide. But I wanted to just say that the whole one of the points of all of this is that we just don't acknowledge this grief. This is not an outcome that we focus on. We talk a lot about PTSD in combat veterans, and we should say that it's not just combat veterans that experience it. But we talk a lot about PTSD, we talk about substance abuse, but we never talk about the grief in the people who served in the military with the people who died. We talk about their families, we focus on their wives, their mothers, their children, their fathers, but we never talk about that other family that they form when they're in the military, which is that, again, the camaraderie that one of your callers talked about. And so it's a very, I always say that I feel like grief may have the same status that PTSD did after the Vietnam War, which is largely overlooked.
Pauline Lubins joining us from Swords to Plowshares, a nonprofit focusing on veterans issues. She's policy analyst with the group, and she's co-author of a study coming out of UC Irvine looking at the ways in which veterans have grieved over the loss of someone close to them who they served with in the military. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. I'm asking both about your experiences as a veteran on this Veterans Day. Also, if you want to talk about the grief aspect of this, like with Pauline Lubin's research, the loss that you've suffered and how you've found ways of processing it or not, we're at 866-893-KPCC. Mike in Hollywood, you're on Air Talk. Mike, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, my father was, like your uncle, in the Battle of the Bulge, and he lost his ankle, the operation of his ankle, and he was, when he went in the service with two of his friends, getting ready to go into the Detroit Tigers Farm Club, and they had actually played some games. They all three joined the service at the same time. My dad is the only one of the three that survived that battle and the war, and my dad's way of handling his grief was he took and he... The Army had a training program. He got a athletic trainer's certificate from the Army, trained the Army guys in what was Heidelberg, I guess a post-war camp at the time in Germany. Came back, and for the next 20 years, he trained Colt and Pony League baseball players in Michigan in the Detroit area, and that's how he paid back for the lives his buddies gave and for the career that he wanted in pro ball that he gave up, that's how he handled his grief.
Mike, that's a beautiful story. Did he talk about the loss of his two friends who died in the battle? Or was that so painful that he didn't talk directly about them?
He would only say it in his humorous way. He couldn't say anything in a serious way because he just couldn't do it. What he'd say was he became a sergeant, and he only became a sergeant because he was the only one that survived. And the rest of his buddy all died, so he got a higher rank, basically. But he would say it in a more humorous way. I can't do it the way my dad did.
But I understand that was sort of the way that he dealt with that. Mike, I appreciate it very much. We'll continue with more calls. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Lee in Pasadena says, I'm a veteran. What I took from my time in the military was respect for the Constitution. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Back in just 1 minute. So good to have you with us on Air Talk on this Veterans Day, in which we're talking with listeners who are veterans about their experiences and what effect their time in service had later on in their lives, positively or negatively. And we're also talking about how veterans have dealt with their grief over loss of those with whom they served, either while in combat or even after that, after returning stateside and losing people to suicide or traumatically. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Victoria in San Bernardino, thank you for being with us. I understand you're an Army veteran.
Yes, I am. I'm an Army veteran, and I wanted to share with you, I'm also a sexual assault survivor in the military. My commanders had actually tried to hide it and sent me away on guard duty for 3 days with no provisions, and just stuck out in the mountains because they wanted it to go away. A specialist named Keller came and got me and went against the commander, and I survived that. I also survived my last 24 hours in the military, where my other commander and first sergeant accused me of stealing ammunition, and I kept a black book because my grandmother said, keep a black book if you go into the military. I went to see the commander of the entire post. I saluted. This is my last 24 hours in the military. I saluted. I handed him the black book. I said, sir, I'm pending an article, a field grade Article 15, and I don't know what's going on. I'm just trying to out-process.
So, Victoria, I'm sorry to interrupt, but how's this affected you all these years later? I think you said you served in the 80s, and what effect has this had today?
I suffered from alcoholism for several years. I went back to Langston University and got a degree in mental health, and through another gentleman named Dr. Henry Clifford Kinley, and got myself together. And today I am alive and well, but I will never, ever forgive the U.S. Army for the things that I suffered in there. I will never forgive them for that.
Victoria, I appreciate your call. Thank you for sharing. I also had a woman that I knew who was sexually assaulted while serving in the Army. And then when she retaliated against the man who sexually assaulted her, she was the one who was brought up and charged on assault for when she essentially beat him up afterwards. 866-893-KPECC. Let's talk next with Ronita in West Los Angeles. Ronita, you were in the Army Reserve. What did it mean for you to serve?
I love, love, love the military. My family is all military. I have a sister in the Navy. I'm in the Army. My dad served in the Army. And I think that's why I love so much, and I love Veterans Day. And I really, suicide is one high priority in my life. I work to help prevent suicide. And also, I think my really concern is transitioning from that active duty to civilian life and how we are caring for our veterans, specifically our homeless veterans. There's so many. And we really, really, really should do more to help them transition, help them find regular jobs and not just a place to live, but live life. Because as a military person, we love to serve and work. We don't want a handout. And so preparing us better would really help, I think, really affect the homeless population for our veterans.
Ronita, I appreciate it very much. Also, I understand that you come from a family of people who've served. When you come from that family culture where a lot of people have been in the military, what effect does that have? How do you think that might be different than if you were just doing it yourself?
I think, so the funny thing about my family serving is I don't think our parents, like, it was something that they said, you need to do what we did. I think it was something that I know for me, I chose right out of high school, I want to do that. And I did get out for a while, but when 9/11 happened, I watched that. I was watching a news channel, and I thought it was not real. And when I saw what happened, I got a desire to come back in. And that's what actually brought me into the Army Reserves again, wanting to never see something like that happen to to the people of our nations and to protect and serve. So,
Ronita, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Great to hear about your experience as well. Ronita in West Los Angeles joining us on Air Talk. Donald in Fullerton. Donald, just briefly, please, your experience. You served in Afghanistan?
Yes, I did, sir. I was a Navy captain over there, orthopedic surgeon during the surge from 2010 to 2011. And, you know, I think one thing that I want to stress is that a lot of times we forget the tremendous amount of stress and PTSD that our medical providers encounter when they're over there. You know, they're in the thick of it. They have to see this horrible carnage day in and day out, and they have to continue functioning in that environment. And a lot of times they don't even get any mental breaks till they're back home. And at that point, it's when they first start feeling some of the repercussion from those injuries.
Really good that you raised that. Thank you so much, Donald. Great call. We appreciate it. Michael in Granada Hills, you're on Air Talk.
Hi. I want to let all the people who serve know that I'm a professional songwriter, and I work with an organization called Songwriting with Soldiers. It's songwritingwithsoldiers.org. It's a bunch of, like, Grammy-winning, big, really successful writers, and they have retreats all over the country. And if you want to apply, you just go to the website. And if you're selected, you go on a retreat with a bunch of older soldiers and some of their family, and you can just tell the writers your story. They turn it into a song that you can take home with you as a recording. And it's been some of the most cathartic, beneficial work I've ever seen these guys do, because it's hard for them to open up. It's hard for them to talk except with other soldiers. But when they can just tell their story to someone who's not judging, they can turn it into another form that they can listen back to. It really opens up things, and it changes their lives, their family's lives, and
all right.
I'll tell you, it certainly changed mine.
Michael, I appreciate it very much. Thank you for joining us. I also want to thank Pauline Lubens, co-author of the UC Irvine study looking at how veterans deal with grief, the different ways that they've lost people close to them with whom they served. Swords to Plowshares, the nonprofit. We have a link to the survey and the study on our AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Also want to share a final comment from one of our AirTalk listeners. It's Ismael in Fontana. He says, I'm an immigrant from Mexico. Before I served in the military, I felt like an outsider. After, I learned to love this country and felt like I belonged. That's Ismael in Fontana. Thank you so much. We appreciate all your terrific calls, sharing your experience as a veteran with your fellow Air Talk listeners. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is next. Have a great afternoon. I'm back with you tomorrow morning at 10.